This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The Mueller investigation ramps up. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Tuesday, October 31, Halloween. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and an associate have been charged with failing to report income while a campaign advisor admits lying to the FBI.
There's been a deadly shooting at the University of Utah.
Five myths about Halloween as the trick-or-treaters come knocking.
And the hottest new cities for real estate investment.
The top of the list is Seattle, and that's not surprising because Seattle's been a top city before, but there are some new entrants to the list like Salt Lake City and Fort Lauderdale who've never been in the top 10 before, and that sort of tells you that they're looking at places that maybe they haven't looked before.
Mitch Rochelle at PwC on the hot new cities for real estate investors. Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has accused two former Trump campaign officials of not paying taxes on millions of dollars in income. Former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort was taken into custody yesterday on charges that he laundered more than $18 million to pay for what prosecutors described as a lavish lifestyle. This was prior to joining the Trump campaign. That income was from work he did for a pro-Russia party in Ukraine. Mr. Manafort and longtime business associate Richard Gates were also charged with conspiring against the U.S. and failing for years to register their lobbying activities. Reaction from White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
Again, there are no activities or official capacity in which the Trump campaign was engaged in any of these activities. Most of them took place well before the campaign ever even existed.
Separately, Trump campaign foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Court documents show Mr. Papadopoulos admitted he spoke to a professor in Russia during the campaign who told him he had dirt on Hillary Clinton. He earlier had told the FBI those contacts occurred only before he joined the campaign. Who exactly is Paul Manafort and what's his political business? Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
Mr. Manafort helped the Trump campaign wrangle delegates for the Republican National Convention. In June of 2016, he became campaign manager when Corey Lewandowski was fired. Mr. Manafort, who's 68, previously worked on behalf of a former Ukraine president who was backed by Russia. He is a longtime lobbyist and political operative who helped the campaigns of Reagan and Ford. In 2004, Mr. Manafort began what's described as a financially lucrative relationship with a billionaire with close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. USA Today, by the way, says in 1985, Mr. Manafort began working with Filipino dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who won election a year later. Amid accusations of human rights violations and voter fraud, Mr. Marcos fled the country weeks later. Around that time, Mr. Manafort also did public relations work for a rebel leader in Angola, whose military efforts drew the support of the U.S. government. A reaction to these charges from Matt Mikowiak, GOP consultant and Washington Times columnist. Matt, how do you see this?
The indictment itself is very serious for Paul Manafort personally and for his business partner, Rick Gates. Multiple felonies, different types of charges, probably some very significant jail time. But I don't know that that particular indictment is all that meaningful as it relates to President Trump personally or to his campaign or to the White House team. That said, this is almost surely not the only indictment that is going to happen. It sounds like part of why that this was timed the way it was due to a statute of limitations concern as to at least one of the charges in the indictment. Perhaps the more significant news is the news that an unpaid foreign policy advisor on the Trump campaign named George Papadopoulos has pled guilty or has admitted that he lied to the feds about communications related to setting up a meeting with a Russian professor. That suggests potentially, number one, that's more of a direct connection. the Manafort and Rick Gates stuff is business stuff related to their business that does not have to do with the campaign based on what we know, based on what we know currently. But the Papadopoulos stuff was when he was serving as an unpaid advisor on the campaign. And this is a significant development. Obviously, it's getting enormous attention. It's swamping everything they want to talk about on tax reform. And it adds a whole new level of complexity and urgency and seriousness to the Russia inquiry as it relates to the Trump team and to the Trump White House, particularly with this news about George Papadopoulos admitting that he lied to the feds.
All right, so this the Manafort and Gates stuff is before quite possibly the two met, I think, from what I read, before they met Trump. But explain, I guess, the Papadopoulos angle here and that importance.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that prosecutors do in these situations. They bring people in, and you don't know what they know when you're being asked questions. And so sometimes the inclination is not to admit something that you think could be illegal or that you think would be embarrassing. And I think that's probably what happened here with Papadopoulos. He didn't know that the feds knew that he had, that probably due to emails or other types of intercepted communications, he didn't know that he had, I mean, there were emails out there. He was trying to set up a meeting with a Russian professor, a Russian-based professor for a pro-Putin figure in Russia. So he lied to the feds when he was asked about that. That is a crime. Oftentimes, what these prosecutors try to do is they try to build a case by first finding illegality or incriminating lower-level people and then getting them to flip and go up the chain.
We're speaking with Matt Mikowiak, GOP consultant, also a columnist for The Washington Times. He does a podcast, too, called Mac on Politics, and we're talking about the indictment of Paul Manafort and an associate, and also the guilty plea by this other official named George Papadopoulos, who was a former Trump foreign policy advisor. If you're reading between the lines, what is the admission by Mr. Papadopoulos mean? Or like, what was he trying to do by meeting with this Russian professor?
Yeah, it's not clear. It's not clear. I think Look, this is what's so fascinating about that aspect of the story is he hiding some more significant piece of information, or did he just lie to the feds? Sometimes we ascribe, you know, strategic motivations to people that just make a mistake or have, you know, poor intentions or poor sort of values to begin with. I mean, the number one rule in life is to never lie to the feds. I mean, it can make your life a living nightmare, and that's probably what George has been dealing with for several months. But that's what's so interesting about this is we just learned about this. But Papadopoulos has apparently been cooperating for several months. And so that raises all kinds of questions about what that could have meant.
I saw somebody react on social media in such a way. They said, this is all you got?
Well, I think if this was all they had, that would be pretty stunning. And I guess that's a possibility that this is the only indictment that they'll bring. I think that's unlikely. I think that this was timed. If you take them at face value, their word at face value had to do with the statute of limitations. They didn't want to be able to not charge Manafort with at least one of the charges that they felt like they had enough evidence to pursue.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Mikowiak, GOP consultants, also a columnist for The Washington Times. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. One person is dead after a shooting near the University of Utah campus at Red Butte Canyon. The university sent an alert at 9 o'clock last night to students and staff to shelter in place after gunshots rang out. Salt Lake City police posted on Twitter that officers are searching for 24-year-old Austin Botain, considered armed and dangerous. The University of Utah said in a tweet that the suspected gunman is a white male wearing black clothing and a beanie hat who has a face tattoo with a cross and a teardrop. Salt Lake City Police Sergeant Brandon Shearer said officers weren't immediately releasing the victim's gender or other details.
We do have one victim in this case that is deceased from a gunshot wound.
At least 8 law enforcement agencies responded, including the FBI. The secure in place, by the way, has been lifted, but there will be no classes today at the University of Utah. The Red Butte Canyon campus is about 8 miles northeast of Salt Lake City. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's charges against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and 2 other aides marks a new phase in his sprawling investigation into Russia and President Trump. Trump immediately sought to distance himself after Manafort and Rick Gates pleaded not guilty to a 12-count indictment alleging money laundering, conspiracy, and other offenses, and as another former aide was revealed to be cooperating with authorities after entering a guilty guilty plea for lying to the FBI. Kevin Downing is Manafort's attorney.
I think you all saw today that President Donald Trump was correct. There is no evidence that Mr. Manafort or the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government.
White House officials were publicly optimistic about Mueller's investigation wrapping up swiftly, but the probe is far from over and its reach uncertain. A federal judge has blocked President Trump from implementing a ban on transgender individuals from serving in the military, the latest high-profile White House initiative to run into problems in court. The Washington judge ruled preliminarily that Trump's ban is likely unconstitutional. She issued an injunction that bars its implementation while legal proceedings continue. Top national security officials are warning congressional lawmakers, demanding a new war authorization, that existing laws governing combat operations against terrorist groups are legally sufficient. They say repealing them prematurely could signal the U.S. is backing away from a fight. During testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson urged Congress to tread carefully.
The United States must retain the proper legal authorities to ensure that nothing restricts or delays our ability to respond effectively and rapidly to terrorist threats to the United States.
Some lawmakers are seeking to replace the post-September 11, 2001 laws. Michael Jackson may be gone, but his earning power is still very much alive. Forbes says Jackson's estate pulled in $75 million, making him the top-grossing dead celebrity. Much of the money coming from a new greatest hits album, a Las Vegas Cirque du Soleil show, and Jackson's stake in the EMI publishing catalog. And number two on the list, golfer Arnold Palmer. He's followed by Peanuts creator George Shultz, Elvis Presley, and Bob Marley.
Mm, that's kind of a weird list to be on.
Well, yeah, of
the
course.
The top-grossing dead celebrities.
Yes, not, it is, but they not, don't. They don't know. They don't care.
Not really room to celebrate there,
no.
Or an opportunity. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. How old is too old to trick or treat? A suburb of Raleigh, North Carolina, thinks it's 13 years old. Holly Springs wants residents to reserve trick or treating for those 12 and under, to only go door to door for candy in their own neighborhood, and to turn off all porch lights by 9 p.m. Officials say the rules are meant to protect the public. Halloween fans say they're grinchy. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borline. Valerie, what's up here?
Well, there's an effort, Gordon, in a lot of towns around the U.S. to try and put a little bit of a box around Halloween. So there have been some complaints that kids were ringing the doorbell a little bit too late at night, maybe older kids coming without a costume just to get candy. And so I went to a little town called Holly Springs, North Carolina, to talk with people about their views on the new guidelines in their town, which say trick-or-treaters need to be under age 13 or 12 and under, and nobody's out after 9 p.m. Mm. Everybody should turn their lights off.
This has been going on for 100 years with people being out too late. What? Why are some of these rules suddenly being discovered on the books now?
You know, it's really funny. It has been around 100 years that we've been celebrating Halloween in this country. It came over with Scottish and Irish immigrants, the traditions of Halloween. But it wasn't really until the 50s and 60s that trick or treating became what it is today, like going around in a group of kids with parents and knocking on doors. And I think there's been kind of a push and pull around trick-or-treating based on what historians will tell you who actually study this. And it's pretty common for authorities to try and say, all right, we're tired of you smashing pumpkins, so we're going to have a town festival and get everybody here and put some order around it. Mm. But it's hard to put a box around Halloween. The mischief wants to come out. That's what they say anyway.
How much of it is purely my junior, societal observer speculation, but we don't talk to each other anymore as neighbors. You know, it's different. Is it just maybe you don't like the idea of strangers coming to your door? Because we are strangers, it seems.
That's a really fascinating point. And I interviewed this historian, Leslie Bannatyne, and she said that she made that exact point. She's like, look, this is the one night of the year that we en masse open our doors to strangers. Mm. And it's really tough to think that we're going to change our habit of doing that. And the point she made was about September 11th. There was some fear in 2001 that people wouldn't trick-or-treat, that we were suspicious or scared. It was just 6 weeks after the tragedy. But she said instead, there's a surge in trick-or-treating and the most popular costume, firefighters. So I think there is a desire to connect with each other, even in times when it feels like we don't know each other.
Hmm. I'm speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borlein. Her piece is called How the Grinch Stole Halloween. She looked at the town of Holly Springs, North Carolina. Who else is doing stuff, putting curfews on or things like that?
It's periodic spots, right? So in Las Vegas, the county is encouraging people to be inside by 9. They have this big campaign. You know, there's no place like home during trick-or-treating is the campaign. and in upstate New York, a little town in Illinois that I talked to has had a curfew in place for a number of years, and it's really worked for them.
Thanks, Valerie. Wall Street Journal reporter Valerie Borlein. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for 3 straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
Catch up with America's First News on Twitter at This Morning Show and like us on Facebook, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, October 31, Halloween. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Manafort and an associate charged by the special prosecutor with avoiding taxes. A Trump campaign advisor pleads guilty to lying to the FBI. The brother of Hillary's campaign manager under investigation as well. Facebook says 126 million Americans were exposed to Russian-backed material on its site. Astros can win the World Series tonight. Patriots trade backup QB Garoppolo to the Niners. And debunking Halloween myths. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The best place to start or grow your business is at michiganbusiness.org. Contact them today. What do Salt Lake City and Fort Lauderdale, Florida have in common? They're the newest top 10 entries in a new report entitled Emerging Trends in Real Estate. The research from PwC finds that smaller and secondary are the leading themes running through this year's top cities. More from Mitch Rochelle, partner at PwC and co-author of the report. Mitch, what are we learning?
So here's the bottom line. If you go back 10 years ago, coming out of the financial crisis, when people started investing back in real estate, they invested in big gateway cities like New York and San Francisco and Chicago, Washington, D.C. But what's happened over time, as the economy has improved, albeit slowly, and real estate investors have found that they really can't get bargains, if you will, in those cities, they started looking elsewhere. So if you look at who's in the top 10 hot cities to invest in for 2018 and emerging trends in real estate, the top of the list is Seattle. And that's not surprising because Seattle's been a top city before, but there are some new entrants to the list like Salt Lake City and Fort Lauderdale who've never been in the top 10 before. And that sort of tells you that they're looking at places that maybe they haven't looked before.
Interesting. All right, so let's start with the first one on the list, Salt Lake City, all the way up at number 3 behind Seattle and Austin. Why Salt Lake City?
Salt Lake City is interesting. By the way, it's the smallest city ever to be in the top 10 list. It's like 1.25 million people there. But what's interesting about Salt Lake City is you have a growing population of young people. The young people are well-educated. They have the STEM skills that are important to the marketplace. There's a lot of startups finding it very attractive to be in Salt Lake City because the cost of doing business is low. In fact, the cost of doing business in Salt Lake City is 12 percentage points lower than the average U.S. cost of doing business.
Wow.
So this young, well-educated, growing population, and that's what's driving business forward. And the real estate investors see where the business prospects are strong, and they want to be there to experience part of the growth.
Wow. All right. Just outside the top 5, too, we got Fort Lauderdale at number 6. How come?
Fort Lauderdale is interesting. It's part of the adjacency to Miami. Miami, it's 11 this year, and they've been in and out of the top 10. But Miami's starting to be viewed as being a little pricey from an investment perspective. So we're looking a little bit north. The other thing is what's happening is millennials who start looking to start families and buy that first home are getting priced out in Miami. So they start heading north, maybe commute a little. And what's happening is we have a high growing concentration of young millennials in the Fort Lauderdale, Greater Broward County area. And what's happening is companies are saying, well, maybe these folks don't want to commute. Maybe we should set up satellite offices there or just start our businesses in Broward. And interestingly enough, there's a lot of new businesses being formed in Fort Lauderdale, in Broward County, and the jobs go where the people are. So that's what's making it a hot market.
How about that? What about the broader housing shortage right now?
Yeah, that remains, I occasionally use the word crisis, and that is often viewed as being a little provocative. But okay, if you look at the housing data that comes out monthly, whether it be new housing, new home sales, existing home sales, we have in some months 3 to 4 months supply of housing compared to a year or more's worth of supply of housing that we had about 10 years ago. And what's happening is basic supply and demand, low supply, high demand, which we do have, drives up prices. And as the prices get driven up, builders aren't creating more supply because of that demand or because of the higher prices, and we're finding that prices just keep going up and they're just sort of edging people out of the home buying market.
I'm speaking with Mitch Rochelle, PwC partner, also co-publisher of a new report entitled Next Big Cities Are Smaller, Younger, and Highly Educated. Seattle is in the number one spot, followed by Austin, Texas. Salt Lake City is in there. Fort Lauderdale in the top 10 as well. Conspicuous from its absence, at least in my mind, is Pittsburgh. I thought that was kind of a hip, new, trendy, millennial-type city.
It is, Gordon, and I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see it in the top 10. One of the things that's on the plus side of the ledger, and I'm an accountant, I say things like this, but on the plus side of the ledger, you have that hip, young, vibrant, almost Austin-like element of Pittsburgh, but there is still a little bit of an old economy that's there, and that old economy is weighing down the market a little bit from a real estate investor standpoint. So I'd give Pittsburgh a couple of years. We've highlighted it a few times as a market to watch, and we still feel it's going to be probably in the top 10 soon enough.
Thanks, Mitch. Mitch Rochelle, partner at PwC, also co-author of that report. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday.
Going all out with the music today. I like it.
It's
very
it's
creepy.
Every break.
Started out with Stranger Things. I'm very, very excited.
Just give me a reason to snatch another Kit Kat. Right. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, by now you've heard plenty about Tom Brady and wife Gisele Bündchen's ultra-healthy lifestyle with what started out as a way to prolong Brady's NFL career, now blossoming into a fitness and nutrition empire. Now, apparently, it's even made its way into the couple's Halloween costume. The Patriots quarterback, known for his love of avocado ice cream, said on a Boston radio show that he would be dressing today as one part of an avocado toast costume that Bündchen purchased. Brady offered few details when pressed, saying that he didn't even know whether he would be the avocado or the toast in this equation, guessing that he'll be wearing whichever one fits. No word on whether Gisele was able to snag a toast costume made with white without white flour, a definite no-no on the couple's very strict diet.
You came up with a Tom Brady story to do on the morning after Jimmy Garoppolo, the backup quarterback, gets traded to the San Francisco 49ers. The poor guy goes from a 6-2 first place team to what are the Niners 0-8 to an 0-8 Niners team.
But he's going to play.
And the best you can do is to come on this program hosted by a Jets fan and do another Tom Brady story.
Well, look, you know, he's got to
about his Halloween avocado costume.
His healthy Halloween costume. He's got to stay healthy. Now they don't have a backup. You know, they always thought that Garoppolo was going to step right in if something happened to Tom. Now Tom's really got to stay healthy.
You know what this means? This means he's playing until he's 50.
Right.
That's why they felt they could get rid of Garoppolo, who's actually going to retire before Brady does.
Yeah.
That's the way this is going down.
Yeah, he's never, ever, ever going to leave. You know that for sure.
Wow.
And Gordon, you know, if you or I were to win millions in the lottery, there's a laundry list of big ticket items we might splurge on first. Maybe a big house, fancy car, Jets season tickets. Oh, wait, you've already splurged on those, just to name a few. But one man in Australia decided to go a little more low key after claiming his prize. He went out and bought a sausage roll. The man who works in construction was wearing his high-visibility vest and hard hat when he claimed his $2.3 million prize at lottery headquarters during a break from work. He told lottery officials that he needed to leave in a hurry so he would have time to pick up a sausage roll on his way back to the job site. He did also say that he would likely use the prize money to pay off his mortgage, but not before he finishes his tasty lunch and presumably the rest of his workday.
Wow.
That's just, this guy, you know, this construction worker just written all over him, right? Like, look, I'm on a break. Yep. I got to get my sausage roll, finish that off, and then get back to work.
Excuse me, guys. I got to pop out for a few minutes. Just going to go claim my $2.3 million lottery prize and a sausage roll.
But I'll be back in time beers after work.
I'll be back in 10. That's something. Very good. Thank you, Mike. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. America's First News. Thanks for spending some time with us on this Halloween. Well, if not Halloween today with all these zombies and clowns, what else could scare the living daylights out of you? Well, this Halloween, MarketWatch says Americans' biggest fear plays right into their greatest vulnerability, their lack of savings. One out of every four Americans says an unplanned financial emergency is their biggest financial fear. 20% say their biggest fear is the loss of a job, according to a survey by personal finance site WalletHub. It makes sense that an unplanned medical bill or some other financial emergency is scarier than a job loss. While the jobs market has improved in the years following the Great Recession and unemployment is the lowest in 16 years, people still struggle to save due to a combination of low interest rates and stagnant wages. A recent Harris poll found 49% of millennials ages 18 to 36 say they do not have enough money in savings to cover the costs of a $500 emergency, while 34% of older adults said the same, and medical bills often cited as the number one cause of personal bankruptcies. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has sent a warning to individuals in President Trump's orbit. If they lie about contacts between the president's campaign and Russians, they'll end up on the wrong end of federal criminal charges. Court papers unsealed yesterday revealed an indictment against Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, and a guilty plea by another advisor who admitted to lying to the FBI about meetings with Russian intermediaries. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the president isn't concerned because Manafort's alleged activities preceded his time with the president.
He responded the same way the rest of us in the White House have, and that's without a lot of reaction because it doesn't have anything to do with us.
But Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley says this is far from over.
If Watergate was algebra, the Russian investigation is calculus. It's complex, nuanced. It's going to take a long time.
Meanwhile, we should get a pretty good idea later today about just how deep Russian involvement got in the presidential election. As major tech companies go before Congress, Facebook, Google, and Twitter executives will appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Facebook is expected to report that a Russian group posted more than 80,000 times on the social network during and after the election. The posts had the potential to reach as many as 126 million users. Gut-wrenching testimony at the sentencing of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl will likely continue with officials who treated the soldier following his brutal 5 years of captivity by Taliban allies. The defense began yesterday with Bergdahl himself describing his experience in enemy hands. That served as a dramatic counterpoint to the emotional testimony of the final prosecution witness, Shannon Allen, whose husband needs help with everyday tasks after being shot in the head while searching for Bergdahl in Afghanistan. Bergdahl faces up to life in prison for endangering his comrades after pleading guilty to desertion. Apparently slow and steady does win the race. A beloved tortoise that went missing from a school in Southern California has been found nearly 22 miles away on a golf course. CBS reports the 140-pound tortoise named Bubba had wandered out of her habitat from a school in the Pacific Palisades. Days later, she showed up at a golf club in Burbank.
Tortoise can't believe what has happened.
She just wanted to golf.
I escaped this doggone school. I finally get to a golf course with a nice watering hole. Bam, they track me down again. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. To ward off the evil spirits of misinformation, USA Today has a look at five commonly shared Halloween myths. Myth number one, people are poisoning the candy. Razor blades, poison, pins, LSD. Remember that in recent years? Images of nails and other foreign objects in Halloween candy have swept across social media. All urban myths. Myth number two, it's open season on black cats. If you believe what you see on social media, Halloween is like the purge for black cats. For use in sacrifice, that is a myth. Myth number three, Satan is the reason for the season. Many Americans believe Halloween is rooted in satanic worship. The holiday's strongest roots sprout from Catholic traditions. Myth number four, it's all about the pumpkins. Well, the original jack-o'-lanterns were carved from turnips. And myth number five, the legend of Sleepy Hollow is a Halloween story. Wrong. Washington Irving's story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, has been called one of the best-known Halloween tales. The story never mentions Halloween. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.